Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. You want experts? We have them. The writers who know what's what. The people in the know. The A-Team on the Beavers and Ducks.
Touchdown, Beavers!
Touchdown, Freeman!
Brought to you by Carlitas.
Beaver Nation, you got a problem, and it ain't Danny Moran of the Oregonian. Danny Moran has been a bright point for Oregon State fans who like great coverage, want to read about their team, want to know what's going on, and he joins us now, part of our expert team. Danny, it was 28-0 at halftime. Did you need toothpicks to keep your eyelids open?
Yeah, anytime there's going to be an 8:15 kickoff, which is pretty absurd, I'm going to need that. But once I got to the hotel in Tucson, I took a quick nap, and that rejuvenated me. So, you know, for Oregon State's sake, at least they made things a little bit interesting, getting some offense going in the second half.
Yeah, it was too little too late for me, though. Like what? First of all, can we start with Khalil Tate? How good is he, or is this Oregon State just being bad on defense?
He's as good as I've seen doing this job. I'm not going to pretend to be a Ken Go who's been at the Oregonian 40 years and seen it all. But what's amazing is, I mean, he threw the ball seven times against Oregon State, which is not unique. I mean, this is a run-first team. This is one of the best running teams in the country. But so much of it is Tate because of how much, you know, respect he commands in that zone read. I mean, he's got five runs this year of 70 yards or more. I mean, that's more than anyone in the past decade, you know, really since they've been tracking the stats. So, you know, he does this to everybody. Everybody knows, in a sense, what's coming. I think, and I don't know if this is where you're going eventually, but the surprise of that was how frustrated Corey Hall was after the game with his defensive staff, because this is not a unique situation like the previous week with Cal when they had their running back Patrick Laird go for 214. That was unexpected. This is pretty much exactly what I expected out of Khalil Tate and that Arizona offense. So that was a little bit surprising.
Yeah, let's talk about Corey Hall, because we heard it from Gary Anderson a lot, and certainly Anderson mentioned it in the text messages that we published on Oregon Live. But he, without calling him out by name, who was he calling out?
You have to think it starts with Kevin Kluin and the defensive coordinator. He's been sticking around as far as this whole season has gone. But within two games, Gary Anderson was, as we've talked about, super hands-on in those defensive meeting rooms, scheming as far as the defense was going. After the first week, they moved Kevin Kluin from down on the field to up in the press box. Gary Anderson said that was, in a sense, to have him clear his mind and be better on top of things. He thought for this team it was a better situation. So there were signs after that first week that there was something really not right with where the defense was, at least in Gary Anderson's eyes. And this is the first time that we've seen Corey Hall, who's been very adamant that the coordinators are the coordinators, been very into promoting them after the game and the trying to not take credit too much credit for himself. But this is the first time we really saw a crack in that. We know there's been some, you know, internal dissension, I believe, on that staff. And so this is another instance of it kind of coming out publicly, which is a surprise. But I would think it starts with Kevin Kluin.
Danny Moran of the Oregonian, OregonLive.com, joining us. He covers the Beavers on a daily basis. Let's start with Darryl Gerritsen, too, on the offensive side. He got some life in the second half. He threw some touchdown passes. What was going on in the second half that wasn't happening in the first half? Is it just Arizona letting down their guard, or did Oregon State figure something out?
You know, I think they recommitted to the run. We haven't gotten to talk to the offensive coaches as far as specific scheming with blocking what changed exactly. But you saw in that first half, I mean, at one point Ryan Nall had 9 carries for 12 yards. He just had no room to run. The Arizona defensive line was getting into the backfield. It was just a complete 180 from what had happened the previous week. So I think that was a big part of it as far as recommitting to the run, and that in a sense guys talked about it opening things up for Gerritsen. You know, I think, you know, he came away, you know, 4 touchdown passes, which is the most he's had since his debut last year at Minnesota. I mean, first time with multiple touchdown passes since then. So in that sense, it was a good game. But there were a couple opportunities early in that game for Oregon State to get going and not be shut out, obviously. A couple times that he just overthrew targets down the middle of the field. So I'd say it was kind of a mixed day for him, because a lot of those numbers, even though they got it going, as you alluded to, I mean, they never got back within less than 3 touchdowns. So it was pretty over pretty quickly and pretty decisively, I'd have to say.
The Oregon State program is still looking for a head coach. I know the name June Jones has come up. I know a lot of people love June Jones, and, you know, he's currently in the CFL, but this is a 64-year-old guy. For me, it feels like June Jones would be the worst possible person that Oregon State – not the worst possible, but this is not somebody Oregon State should be serious about. Am I misreading? Is he just a name that's floating around this thing?
No, I think that's right. I mean, obviously, you know, the one thing that he does have is, you know, some local ties, you know, having gone to Grant High School, you know, being, you know, from around here, having those West Coast ties. I think why he's, you know, probably intriguing to some people is because of his background with the offense, particularly at Hawaii when he was there, you know, 10 years ago at that point. And that's something that Oregon State has lacked, to say the least, for the past couple of years under Gary Anderson and now Corey Hall. So, I mean, I think that's why maybe that name bubbles up. I'm sure he's interested. I'm sure, you know, he wants to get his name out there. But you look at how things went, you know, at SMU, which was his most recent stop, and, you know, it was a situation he resigned 2 games in 2014.
Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, maybe 10 years ago when things were really rolling at Hawaii, that would have been a time that he would have been an intriguing candidate. But I think particularly with the way that those things ended at SMU, it'd be hard-pressed to – he'd have to really, really give them a reason that he'd be the guy, because there's a lot of recent history there that's not really explained that well.
Give me 2 people that you think Oregon State will absolutely interview.
I come back, you know, from what I hear as far as what donors are interested in, which I think that'll be an interesting dynamic to see how much Scott Barnes – wants to independently make this decision and how much he's listening to donors, who he's going to need as he, you know, goes forward with his facilities plan that he's outlined. The 2 names are Jonathan Smith and Bo Baldwin. Jonathan Smith, obviously the former Oregon State quarterback. There's a lot of nostalgia there for, you know, just those great Oregon State teams, that great, you know, Fiesta Bowl team where he was the quarterback. Obviously, I think, you know, as far as his star nationally, it's maybe taken a little bit of a hit this year, and Washington hasn't quite been the level of offense that it was last year when they had a Jonathan Ross, you know, an elite receiver to complement Pettis. But, you know, it would still be an alum taking away an offensive coordinator from a rival team in the Pac-12 North. I think there's all those elements there. And then Bo Baldwin, obviously his, you know, background being a head coach at the Division I AA level, now that he's got some Pac-12 experience. Again, I think it's all going to come down to offense. You know, we'll see. I would be surprised if Corey Hall didn't get an interview, but I think at this point, Baldwin and Smith, with their offensive backgrounds and their backgrounds in the Pac-12, are the ones that I would expect.
You've watched Oregon a little bit from a distance. You've now seen Arizona up close. How dicey is Arizona's offense against Oregon's defense?
Yeah, it's... You know, I did see today that it looks like Oregon may get Troy Dye back, you know, which I think would be massive for them. But, you know, I just keep coming back to every defense knows what's coming. I think the scariest offenses are when you know exactly what that team is going to do and you can't find a way to stop it. I mean, even USC, who, you know, looks like they probably win the Pac-12 at this point. They're at least probably the favorites to win the Pac-12. They were obviously able to be the one team to beat Arizona, but they still couldn't find a way to really stop Tate, you know, when it came down to it. So I think it'll be tough. I mean, the different factor, obviously, is the weather. I don't think we've seen Khalil Tate in rain, if that is what it's going to be on Saturday. So that particularly given what seemed to be his limitations in the passing game, are probably going to be Oregon's best chance to contain him.
All right, Danny Moran of the Oregonian, OregonLive.com. Danny, I will see you in the press box on Saturday.
Great. Looking forward to it, John.
All right. There he is, covering all things Beavers. Mike Riley's in trouble, speaking of former Beaver coaches. Mike Riley made a comment today to ESPN. that is the beginning of the end. I mean, really. He said, quote, "We have had very few issues except for the games," end quote. See, that's a minor thing there, coach. I know what he means. Like, hey, we feel like we're good in practice. Feel like we're doing things right. But it's clear in the loss to Minnesota that Mike Riley's players at Nebraska have quit on him. So the question now becomes for Nebraska, can it get Scott Frost? Can it get Scott Frost, or is that job not as good as maybe some of the other jobs that are going to open? Because Tennessee has fired Butch Jones. And by the way, Brady Hoke, just how he planned it, Brady Hoke is the interim coach at Tennessee. But it's like just how they planned it. Here's John Curry talking about the decision that Tennessee made.
Ultimately, we have to make the decision we believe is the best interest of the student athletes we have at the University of Tennessee right now. Coach Jones spoke to the team first, and then I followed. I thank them for their continued commitment to doing the right things.
That's John Curry, who's the athletic director at Tennessee now. He's now got an opening. Brady Hoke is the interim head coach at Tennessee. And people are like, this is Brady Hoke, coach of the year, three-time coach of the year, is now got the head job. And the Vols, by the way, allowed 33 unanswered points in losing to Missouri. They're 4-6. 0-6 in the SEC. Now, Butch Jones, he was not fired with cause. By the way, shouldn't it be cause if you don't win football games? Like, I always cringe at that when I see a head football coach. He was fired. He was not fired with cause. He was 0-6 in the SEC. He got fired because of cause. He didn't perform. Still, he gets his buyout, $8.2 million. And the entire staff at Tennessee, that cost Tennessee $13 million. So, this came, you know, on September 30th, they lost 41-0 to Georgia. So that was like the beginning. And they went, all right, we're not competitive. Mike Riley's in trouble. He's done at Nebraska. He will be fired. That job will be open. And I keep thinking about Oregon State and how this all affects Oregon State. Because Oregon State's advantage was it had the only big-time Power 5 conference opening. And now Nebraska's going to soon have one. I don't know if Mike Riley's going to make the year. Tennessee's got one. We're going to talk about that coming up next. I want you to finish this sentence for me. I guess not. Don't finish this sentence. Just tell me what's ruining football. What is ruining football? Don on Twitter says too many penalties are ruining the game. He wants no more penalties more than 10 yards away from the play unless it's for something that could cause an injury. Tell me what's ruining football. 503-417-7575. I think it's on your mind. I think you want to tell me what's ruining football. I think some of you want to say, look, the games on so many nights a week are ruining football. I think some people want to tell me, no, it's the politics that are ruining football. I think some of you want to say, no, it's the violence of the game, the CTE, the brain injuries, they're ruining football. I think some of you want to go, no, you know what's ruined football for me? The fact that other sports have become more interesting to me. Penalties, says Don, have ruined football. Injuries, say others. Tell me what's ruining football. 503-417-7575. What is ruining football? You tell me. Coming up at top of the hour, we will hear from Ted Wynn, who was the subject of my weekend column. He's the former social media manager at Nike, and he's a guy who is in the fight for his life. He's going to talk to us about perspective with life and the messages that he's received from famous athletes and just going to ask him some questions about, you know, what he's going through and advice he has for the rest of us. But in the meantime, I want you to tell me what's ruining football. 503-417-7575. Andre in Portland, one of my favorite callers, has called in. Andre, what's ruining football?
The penalties are ruining football. You can't take something that you grew up with in the 80s. That was in my opinion, it was the height of football, the 80s, 90s. It was awesome. Now, the game does not resemble that at all. There's too many other things that you can do other than watch football. I my team is the Broncos. Last night they start sucking. I have absolutely no problem turning them off and going to get on Madden or whatever. I have absolutely no problem doing that whatsoever. It's not intriguing at all. College football is still intriguing to me. The NBA and the NFL is losing it for me. It's just, it's not the same. I have absolutely no issue going to do something else other than watch the game. And it's on too many nights a week.
Andre, you have weighed in. You have told me what you think is ruining football. I want to hear from other people at 503-417-7575. What is ruining football? Is it ruining football that guys are getting hurt? I don't hear that as much as some of the other things. And I used to hear a lot that instant replay was ruining football. And I've heard in recent months people say or raise the idea that they won't watch football anymore. So what's ruining football for you? You tell me at 503-417-7575. Only you can answer this. See, I can sit back. I'm paid to watch football. I sit in the press box. I watch the games. I report on it. I write columns on it. I come on the show and talk about it. I go on KGW on Sunday nights right after the NFL game, and I talk about what I've seen in the NFL. See, football to me is not getting ruined, but I'm not viewing it through your lens. So I think you're in a position where you can, for a moment, have the platform and go, here's what's wrong. Here's what's wrong with football. Here's what's ruining it for me. Because what happens is what the message comes from media nationally who are paid to watch football. We're paid to watch on it. We're paid to report on it. We're paid to talk about it. We have all the clips. And so we all go, hey, there's nothing wrong with football. We're biased. We're bought. We're compromised. You're not. You're the market. And guess what? The market doesn't lie. Rob, you're in Beaverton. What's ruining football?
Too many days of football. Honestly, can it just go back? I mean, maybe I'm old, John, but Sunday and Monday, that's all we freaking need. You're diluting the sport, and the players are getting injured because they're playing too many games of youth.
How old are you?
That's my old. I'm 48.
You're not too old. That's not that old. You're about halfway point. Like your life is a race, you're about halfway.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're not that old. Too many days, says Robin Beaverton. 503-417-7575. Did I say too many gays? I meant too many days. Don't call in and rip on me and be like, hey, what's wrong with, you know, that's not what I'm saying. Just slipped up. Alabama Adriana's head went backwards. She laughed at the ceiling. I thought, oh, did I say that? Do you remember that guy did a sports report? And he, let me pull this up because I don't want to get this wrong. All right. Okay. The Jayhawks were playing. This guy named Jack Harry, he called them the Gayhawks. And then later he denied that he said Gayhawks. Okay. Because I'm not refuting that I said too many gays. I meant to say too many days and gays came out. But Jack Harry denied that he said Gayhawks here. And then, but the problem is the audio exists. So let's see.
During our 10 o'clock sports report last night, I was having a discussion with Frank Bowl. We were talking about the Kansas Jayhawks, and somehow, some way, I don't know what happened, but it got out on the social media today that I used a derogatory term in talking about the Kansas Jayhawks. Believe me, folks, I would never, ever go on the air. That's not what I am all about. I've had my go-around with Jayhawk fans, but I would never say what I have been accused of, and I felt compelled to get that out today. Thank you.
Okay, that was his apology, I guess, or his explanation. Did he say it or not?
But you don't think they're overrated, then, these Jayhawks? Jayhawks.
Well, what do you mean?
At number one or two in the nation are overrated.
You bet they are right now.
But you don't think they're overrated, then, these Jayhawks?
Jayhawks.
Well, what do you mean?
At number one or two in the nation are overrated.
You bet they are.
I think he did say it. I don't know what it means. I don't know if that was... Is that something that people who don't like the Jayhawks say about them to try to make them feel bad? I don't know. Tom's in Beaverton. Tom, go ahead.
I'd say my gripe about football right now, or always has been, the pass interference spot of the foul penalty. I've always thought that it should be 10 yards or 15 yards max. if the team is pressing in the red zone and they're inside 10 yards, spot of the foul.
That's a game changer.
Yeah, I hate seeing, a 60-yard penalty on a play where the guy might have caught it if he hadn't been held. That always drives me crazy.
It drives me crazy, too, because it really makes that defensive back on an island. It puts him on an island. But has that ruined football for you? I want to know what's ruined football for you. And only you can answer this. You're watching the games, or maybe you're not anymore, or maybe you're turned off. Is it the fact that these games are on Monday night, Thursday night, Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday? Is it the fact that the penalties are being called at a rate that feels like it's exorbitant? Is it replay? Is it the touchdown celebrations? Is it Colin Kaepernick getting named the GQ Humanitarian or Citizen of the Year? What has ruined football for you? What, for those of you especially that go, you know what? I'm not watching anymore. Is it the fact that your team isn't good that's ruining football? See, for me, because I do think the media are in a position where we sit around and we go, hey, the ratings are just fine. The game is as watched as it's ever been. You know what's ruined football? I think television's ruined football. Because I think television got really good at broadcasting football games. So good that people went, I don't have to go to the stadium to see the game. In fact, I can see it better at home. And then what happened is all the advertising revenue got driven into those football games, and it became very lucrative. On a Thursday night, in fact, the NFL makes $45 million per game for broadcasting those games. That's what the rights are worth. So what do you think the television network's going to do when it pays $45 million to the NFL for a Thursday night game? It's not going to lose money. It's going to take every possible commercial break and jam it in. It's going to take game action. It's going to put brought to you by across the television screen. It's going to start the pregame show and make the postgame show go so it can make more revenue in the pre and the postgame show to make it worthwhile. I think it's killed the golden goose. Television, you've ruined football. You tell me what's ruined football. 503-417-7575.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.